In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah, you better believe it. Alan Adams here in studio to talk movies and more. But before we talk movies, really the important thing, congratulations, Al, on being voted in to the first class of the Downtown Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you very much. It is an honor and a privilege. I will wear the crown with respect and dignity. In so much as the office deserves it,
whatever that means. yeah. We're talking possibilities here. I'll throw a few out at you. We did actually look at temporary tattoos.
Oh, funny.
Which we might do anyway for those handful of inductees who would actually go along, which we figured you would
of
do
course.
It. I mean, David Roth would do it.
Yeah, Roth will be in for sure.
John Davidson would probably do it if we can get one too. There are a few others that would jump in, but we're looking at some other things, some special shirts maybe, or
like whatever it is. Like I'll wear it, yeah. I'll stick it on me,
yeah.
I'll put it on my shelf, whatever it winds up being. It's impressive company to be sure.
Well, it is indeed. I mean, it's quite a group, and I was looking at it because we said you had to have been on the show at least twice, but I think now. Let's see. Everybody in there has been on really at least three times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some of them, you've been on more than anybody else.
Right.
Yeah, Bob Ryan, Chad Finn, Gary Tanguay, hundreds of times.
All those guys have been on like a bunch.
Ken Burns, like a dozen times. Tobolowsky, I think, his 20th appearance last time. Paula Poundstone, Mike Farrell, Perry Gilpin, Mark Duplass, Curtis Armstrong, John Davidson, all over a dozen appearances.
Yeah.
They weren't one-timers. These are people who keep coming back.
Right. And that's, well, I mean, it's indicative. Well, and the fact of the matter is, like, you look at that list and it's like, oh, yeah, so these are 15 of the best guests and also me. It really is an impressive roster of guests, and it's like you say, the best guest list in radio, and mm-hmm. you know, things like this just sort of point out how true that is.
We like to think so, but everybody's a great guest. Well, not everybody, but everybody on that ballot is a great guest. There've been a couple through the years.
Oh, sure, you can't be on the air for as long as the show has without having a few clunkers in there.
Exactly, but. They don't come back. One-timers there. Let's see. What else is going on in your world?
Oh, well, we should probably talk about the Focus Group has a show coming up this weekend on Friday night. We will be at the Bangor Arts Exchange at 8 o'clock. And we're doing something a little different this time around. Mm. We are collaborating with Story Slam Bangor, which is a group that started actually many years ago, but went dormant for a while. There have been other story slams in the area, but this particular group had shut it down for a bit, and they're bringing it back. And as part of their sort of return to the spotlight, they asked if we would be willing to do a sort of collaborative show with them. We said, I mean, it's your funeral, but so what we're going to try to do is it'll be a standard story slam format. People will come if they want to tell a story. They'll put their name in the hat, the jar, whatever is being drawn from. They'll randomly draw names. People will come up. They'll have 5 minutes to tell their story. And at the conclusion of each story, the focus group will use that story as inspiration for... Oh, I'm guessing it's probably going to be 7 to 10 minutes of improv. We'll do that, and then we'll go on to the next story and lather, rinse, repeat. It's going to be fun. We've never done anything really like this before, so God only knows how it's going to go. But I know Jesse Moriarty and Sarah Smiley and all the folks involved with Story Slam Bangor are really gonna bring their A game. So I figure we gotta pull at least a B-. Out of our backsides.
Oh, yeah.
B minus, that seems doable. So I think we'll be all right. But yeah, like I said, this Friday night, May 12th at the Bangor Arts Exchange, come see a show that's honestly probably unlike anything you've seen around here before. So We'll see how it goes. If nothing else, it'll be an adventure.
I love it. It sounds great. Check it out on Friday night. All right, let's talk movies. What have you seen?
Just the one this week, but it's the big one. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We don't need to relitigate it every time. Like, I'm obviously in the bag for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, that is, I've made that abundantly clear. And I have found silver linings in some recent films that perhaps didn't necessarily measure up. But I, as a fan, like, I'm always going to err on the side of the good when it comes to these films. Happily, I did not have to do that with this one because it is actually excellent.
Mm.
It's what is probably going to be James Gunn's last turn in the directorial chair for the MCU, as he has moved over to take over operations for DC. Their tremendous gain is a very large loss for the MCU. Gunn has he's such a talented filmmaker, and he has such a wonderful skewed perspective when it comes to telling these particular types of stories, these stories about superheroes. Like, he has such a gift for striking that balance of humor and tragedy and pathos and ridiculousness and absurdity that is basically inherent to all comic book storytelling. I don't know that anyone has consistently brought that full combo to bear on screen like James Gunn has. And Guardians of the Galaxy is very much his baby. Like, he has written and directed all three of these films. And so it probably will come as no surprise that this film does feel a little bit like a coda of sorts, like a sort of a farewell to at least this particular era of this group. As with all Marvel movies, there's enough open-endedness to it that you can see how, if they want to continue going forward with some of these characters, they certainly can do that. But it does feel like Gunn has finished telling the story that he wanted to tell. And that's, honestly, in this age of, you know, overwhelming IP and franchise, you know, sequels and whatnot, like, it's becoming vanishingly rare, the idea that a filmmaker is able to end a particular story on their own terms. Another joy of this movie is it's probably the least amount of homework that you're going to have to do for a Marvel movie, certainly in any of the more recent iterations, because so much of it is so tied into the overarching storytelling. And this movie kind of exists separately from a lot of that, which is good. Well, it's just, I don't know, it's less a straightforward superhero movie and more of a sci-fi movie that happens to have, like, comic book characters in it, which really works for Gunn's sensibility. It really works for the actors that they have, as well as the story that they're trying to tell. But ultimately, I think it's just a chance to just go out there and have some fun, you know? And we've talked about this before. A lot of times, some of these movies lose sight of the fact that they are, in fact, supposed to be fun. And so when you get a movie like this one that is unapologetic in its goofiness, even when, we're dealing with moments of real emotional depth. Like, I don't want to damn this movie with faint praise. There are very real emotional stakes happening here in a way that feels very it's almost like you don't expect this level of emotional commitment from, you know, a movie that prominently features an anthropomorphized tree and a talking raccoon, you know what I mean? Like, it's just not, you don't necessarily anticipate getting that from a movie like this, and yet that's exactly what you do get. I'll go into the plot a little bit. It does get a little convoluted within itself, although not necessarily extending tendrils out into the wider MCU. But basically, our Guardians of the Galaxy, you're Peter Quill, Star-Lord, that's Chris Pratt. You've got Nebula, that's Karen Gillan. The aforementioned Tree, Vin Diesel, and Raccoon, Bradley Cooper, as well as Gamora, Zoe Saldana, who those who, at the risk of spoiling a 5-year-old movie at this point, those of you who are followers of the MCU might remember that she in fact died in the sort of Avengers Endgame situation, and so but was brought back due to time travel shenanigans, as often is the case in the comic book realm. But this version of Gamora existed comes from a time before she knew the rest of these people, and so the pre-existing relationships don't really exist for her anymore, even though they do for everyone else. Last but not least, before I forget, you can't forget Drax the Destroyer, played by the excellent Dave Bautista, and Mantis, played by Pom Clementiff, as well as a number of various other hangers-on, crazy space pirates, and the Russian cosmonaut dog that's now telekinetic, and so on and so forth. But basically, the gist is we're looking at... this group has to come together in an effort to stop the evils. I'm casting value judgments. The amoral machinations of a guy known as the High Evolutionary, and the High Evolutionary has taken it upon himself to create the perfect species to populate a planet and create a utopia. The way he does that. Perhaps stretches some ethical boundaries with regards to the practice of science. Specifically, he is, as we learn in a series of, frankly, kind of heartbreaking flashbacks, he is basically the power behind Rocket Raccoon becoming Rocket Raccoon.
Mm.
So we get to see a lot of Rocket's pretty tragic backstory told in flashback, which is again, like I said, like, look, you don't expect to get all misty-eyed when you're looking at like a clearly CGI'd cartoon the raccoon, but here you are, and it's like it's another testament to the power of the storytelling that James Gunn brings to the table, and. You know, hijinks ensue. Like, I'm not going to go get into the weeds as far as the plot is concerned. Honestly, like the more I tell you, the less sense it's going to make anyway. So better for you to just sit down and see it for yourself. And I can't stress enough, you very much should see this movie. Like, if you have any interest in the MCU writ large, if you enjoy these characters or what have you, like, you should really see it. And as I mentioned before, the lack of homework is makes the Guardians movies, frankly, as a collective, a much easier entry point into the MCU than perhaps some of the other films, because they are relatively self-contained. Basically, like, if you have a chance to watch the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special before you go see this movie, I highly recommend it. I would highly recommend it anyway because it's hysterical and awesome. But that sort of gets shouted out a couple of times in the context of this new movie. And also, like, there are some other, I mentioned some of the earlier movie plot machinations that affect this film, but there's actually a phenomenal scene where we basically get like a 2-minute, and it's literally in an elevator. We get this 2-minute elevator pitch of basically like that basically sums up like everything that the audience needs to know if they don't know this stuff beforehand, where they talk about the whole deal with Gamora and all this stuff. And it's just like it's just like this wonderful, like 30-second like exposition dump that happens while they're riding in an elevator. And it's just like, oh, see, you get it. You get what this needs to be. The performances are wonderful. I love everyone in this movie and in the roles that they've been cast in. The truth is that it's probably the best ensemble of all of these groups, just because everyone so clearly understands the assignment. Like, they know what kind of movie they're making, and they're all capable of making the sort of, they have the range, I guess. And, not everyone who winds up in these movies does necessarily. And I don't want to be dismissive of anyone in particular, but it's just like, I love the fact that these characters have been allowed to grow in such idiosyncratic and kind of strange ways and not be bound by the larger Marvel machine. I mean, they are, because they all are, and they're all interconnected parts. But the Guardians movies, they're like the little cogwheels on the outside. Like they're kind of connected, but they're not central to the greater mechanism, which makes them so much easier to sort of just enjoy on their merits rather than worrying about, oh, am I going to miss, you know, the introduction of X character or is that Y MacGuffin that I'm going to need to remember three movies down the road because it's some part of the larger picture. Instead, what you get is a very funny, very heartfelt, action-packed. Like the action sequences are great. They have a couple of, you know, big sort of space fight shoot 'em ups. They have a actually pretty fantastic hallway fight. I love a good hallway fight, and they have one of those in this. And you just have a lot of actors who clearly care about their characters. Even Dave Bautista, who has said, you know, he's kind of done, like he wants to move forward in his career, but he so obviously has a real affection for this character and how he plays it, but every single one of them gets those pieces of character development. Then, you know, it's not just about, you know, moving the plot along, whether it's the plot within the movie or the greater sort of meta arc. It's about the relationships that these characters have with one another, whether it's the primary, you know, the main movers, or your big bad, or again the aforementioned, you know cosmonaut dog, who again is telepathic and can talk, and is just an unending source of delight for me, and I'm sure many others. So, look, I'm sure at least some of these characters and some of these actors are going to stick around. I know Chris Pratt has said that he's willing to keep doing this. I'm sure, like, you know, for the Vin Diesels and Bradley Coopers of the world, like, this has got to be easy work, you know, and they're clearly having a good time. And so, one assumes they'll stick around, but we're also very much at a crossroads that is illustrated quite beautifully, actually, at the end of the film. I'm not going to spoil it, but we do get to see both, you know, it's basically like when one door closes, another opens, and we get that kind of vibe. And so this particular trilogy has its closure, but if the powers that be want to continue forward, there are certainly avenues to do that. So, yeah, I was thrilled that they were able to go out sort of on their own terms. A quality offering, probably the best one we've seen from Marvel in a bit. And it'll be interesting to see how it does, you know, commercially versus some of the few that have come before and the ones that are still coming down the road. But yeah, so far so good. And as far as swan songs are concerned, you know, James Gunn could have done a lot worse.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, it's very good.
Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Congratulations again.
Oh man, I'm gonna everything I sign from now on, I'm gonna have that little HOF at the end of it.
I love that's great. And break legs on Friday night.
Thank you, sir.
Focus group this Friday, Bangor Arts Exchange.